Are you self-employed? Or just accidentally working for a terrible boss? You. Because if you're undercharging, overcommitting, and forgetting to build a financial buffer, you might have created the hardest job you've ever had, actually, with none of the benefits you wanted from that self-employed life. But we're going to fix it. So, welcome to Ask the Experts, where each week we talk to people in the industry, get that inside word on what's happening right now and what that means for the tactics you should use to make the most of your money. Look, being self-employed can be a brilliant way to work on your own terms, but without a plan, it's easy to fall into some pretty painful traps, like underpricing your services, spending money you haven't actually earned yet, or skipping essentials like insurance or a retirement plan because you're too busy juggling today. Add in some lumpy cash flow into the mix, and it's no surprise that self-employed people often struggle to get funding from banks or build financial security for the long haul. So, how do you run your business and your money like a grown-up? Today I'm joined by Justin Gauci from Enable Me. We've had him on before. He's coming back. He works with self-employed clients every day, and he knows exactly what trips people up and what you can do to fix it. So he's going to lay it all out for us.
Making Sense has partnered up with Enable Me to get you the strategies for reaching financial freedom faster. Whether you're wanting to get mortgage free or grow your wealth through investments, they've got the team to help you. Head to their website to learn more. Visit enable.me today.
Making Sense is on a mission to make money simple, and I just couldn't do that without the support of KiwiBank. It's really important to me to only work with companies that understand that mission. And for KiwiBank, their purpose is to help Kiwi and Aotearoa be better off. So bringing you real stories of different approaches to finance is one of the ways they're making a difference to the lives of their customers. This is making Kiwi better off. This is Kiwi. Welcome in, Justin. Now look, cards on the table. I love the self-employed life, but it's not always, you know, there's a learning curve there, right? You can make it not so good for yourself. So are there some key things when you're talking to people that crop up over and over?
Yeah, probably the key thing I see is people obviously do it for the change, be your own boss, and it's got its amazing perks there. But you still need to think about your own personal financial situation as a household or an individual and working out how to get the best in both worlds. And yeah, I think looking at them as two worlds is probably one of the other things that I think is a mindset shift that can make a big impact.
Yes, I can imagine. All right. How do you help people start to separate that out then?
Understand what your fixed cost base is within your business and probably keep 3 months worth of buffer of that in the business. That gives good resilience to the business for those lumpy cash flow periods. But also, so often I see people leave too much money left over in a business account while they're not making any sort of financial progress on the house front. So whether that's setting up for retirement, saving up for a mortgage, with a mortgage paying it off faster, all this money's dormant left over in a business because they've probably heard from their accountant potentially that if you pay yourself a little bit more or we take these dividends out, there's tax on it. But the cost of doing nothing is a lot more than the cost of that little tax bill because the business is doing well. But it's just this money's just sitting there doing nothing in, at best, a savings account earning minimal interest. But quite often I see it just in an on-call account, six figures of just funds just sitting there doing nothing at all.
Oh, 100%. This applies to more of the individuals, right? But I was just reading a news report about this where more and more New Zealanders are leaving too much cash just sitting in everyday accounts where they don't even get a savings account interest rate on it. And if people even just put half of what's sitting in everyday accounts into savings, that's another $1.2 billion for New Zealanders as a whole each year. And okay, that's individuals. What a business could be playing with is so much more. So it is this fine line, isn't it? Like you say, you do want to have a buffer to make sure the business is stable. You've got that sorted. But it's a Goldilocks zone. Not too little, not too much, because then that money can be doing more for you, right?
Yeah, 100%. So yeah, that money coming back across could shave years off a mortgage, or that could be investing into to manage funds or investment properties or things just for that retirement so they can scale back the work. You know, they might be in their 30s thinking that's way too far down the track, but there becomes a point in time where we need to cash that sort of stuff in. And if you haven't built it, what are you cashing in?
Okay, so on that, I feel like KiwiSaver is one that often gets skipped when people are self-employed. And I get it, because this is one of the, like, I love KiwiSaver, cards on the table, but there are holes in it. And the way it treats self-employed people is one of the things I would fix if I was given a magic wand. You really only get the government contribution, which is now even less than it was. Yay. Should self-employed people still consider KiwiSaver? Is there a different alternative to planning for their future? What's good?
Yeah, look, they definitely shouldn't ignore it, and so many do. But even with it halved, the government contribution, it's a 25% return on investment. So putting the money in, for every dollar you're putting in, the government's putting in 25 cents there once you hit that 1,043 or... Yeah, whatever it is. And I say to my self-employed clients, whatever's going to work for your situation to hit that mark by June 30th. Now, that might be a reminder on the 2nd of June to get 1,043 across, or it's a weekly contribution in there, because that's money you're not getting off the government by not contributing. And then it compounds year after year. Your money plus the government's money is going to be, you know, invested, getting returns. That's heaps of, you know, money left off the table if you're just leaving it, maybe potentially sitting in a on-call account in the business. Over and above that, though, there's probably other things that I'd prefer my self-employed clients to be doing. So I don't really want to go above that amount, because you might want to retire earlier than the legislation says we can touch KiwiSaver now at 65. Who knows, by the time we're at that age, if it's 67, 70, who knows? You know, we can't guarantee that. But if you want funds at 55 or 60, you know, we need to be building up these other areas. So yeah, putting too much into that basket, I'd rather it get, if we've got the excess funds to invest more, I'd do it in some other ways.
What sort of things are a good option?
You know, if they have a home, pay off the home faster. If they're already in a good spot on that, it could be investing and using the equity in that home. So, you know, potentially buying an investment property, or it could be putting it into a managed fund. Could even be with the same provider as your KiwiSaver, but it's just the rule around it, around when you can use it's different. So it really depends on where they're at, but yeah, it's just having a little bit more control of how you use those funds in the future.
Mm. Okay. I feel like another one as well, because of course there's always more you can do if you earn more. You've got to control what you've got coming in. You've got to be smart with your money, but there is also the reality that earning a decent amount makes that easier. I think a lot of people, particularly probably at the start, struggle with figuring out how much they can charge, what's right. How do you figure that out, whether or not you're hitting that market rate or you've just created yourself a new barely paying job?
Yeah, expensive hobby. To a client recently. You've got to understand what the market pricing sort of is and where you fit within the market. I think one of the other big things that people struggle with, and it takes a little bit of time to get used to, is the demand for your service. How to build that, or is it going to get to the levels it needs to? Pricing yourself in is one point, but revenue is not income. It's what you can pay yourself is actually the profit at the end of it. So you need to understand what your cost base is, just as much as how much you're going to be able to charge and frequency of getting those customers in. So for a PAYE person, you know, we get a salary and tax gets taken off it. It's profit that tax then gets taken off, and that's what you walk away with. So you can't just think at that top revenue number, because if half of it's gone on expenses, you're not actually earning as a comparative salary the same amount, you know. So that's the real struggle at times for some clients.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel like a lot of people do get into, particularly the small businesses, they might get into it because they love what they do. They love the business, not necessarily the business side of it, if you know what I mean there on the difference. But there are now, I mean, there's lots of pros and cons on the old AI, but one of the big pros is that you can more easily run numbers, I feel, these days, and get a good idea of, oh, actually, what's happening here? You know, if they can find ways, right, to make it a bit easier, you've just got to bite the bullet, make it as easy as you can, but then also do it.
Exactly. Yeah, you can't fly blind. You can't just be the deliver the service or the product. Got to know the business. And that does require whether it's outsourced or AI or taking a little bit of time out in the week and being across your own business's numbers. That's part of it. You know, you're not going to be doing well enough just ignoring that stuff.
Yeah. And you mentioned tax earlier. I feel like tax is just gives everyone a little bit of PTSD because it's complicated and it gets more complicated when you're running a business. But it comes up a lot, the idea of claiming tax back. And it's almost seen as a magic money loop. Not necessarily though, right?
100%. Yeah. And the amount of people, whether it's clients or just friends or people you hear about that, yeah, think, oh, I'll just put it on the business. It's not free. Like it's like me saying I'm putting it on the business and when I'm an employee and it's my money that's being spent on it. If you're the business, it's your money. You can claim back, yeah, that maybe the GST on it and it's a little bit cheaper. But if you didn't need what it was, then it's not free money. You've just overspent. And this is where people get tripped up when they're applying for home mortgages because they put so many costs through the business, so many frivolous costs that they didn't need as well to reduce the profit, to pay less tax. Then when the bank looks at you, they look at your profit number and say, hey, you're on 60K a year. We'll give you 400K max for the lending. When you're like, oh, what? I thought I earned a lot more than that. So, yeah, you put through about 20K of costs that you didn't need last year. That could be worth a couple of hundred grand on a pre-approval. Just overspending in areas just because it can look like a business expense or is a business expense, but it's not necessity for the business to operate. It could have got through with a bit more profit and tax. You know, that big word, we want to pay less of it. That trips people up because it's, if you're paying tax, it means you're earning money. And it's better to pay a little bit more tax and earn more money than pay less tax and have less to walk away with at the end of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes me think of, and I wish I could put the clip in here, but copyright issues. So I will just have to do a bad job of explaining it and people can go and Google this afterwards. But the clip from Schitt's Creek where they are buying up like literally sheets and candles and David's going, it's a write-off. It's a write-off. And the dad's just turning to him and saying, a write-off to what? What do you think that means? A write-off to who? And the amount of times it's a write-off gets said in my house.
Not so fun fact. When you take on a 30-year mortgage, you'll probably pay more than double what you originally borrowed because of the cost of interest. That's probably not the Kiwi dream you bought into. The team at EnableMe specialise in taking charge of your money and growing your wealth, including how to get rid of your mortgage faster. Book a consultation with an EnableMe financial advisor today by visiting enable.me.
Life looks different for everyone. Maybe you're buying your first home, growing your whānau, dreaming of travel, or simply trying to stay on top of things. KiwiBank has the tools to help you manage your money your way. Find out more at kiwibank.co.nz. This is making Kiwi better off. This is Kiwi. Okay, so don't hope that you can claim back money that you maybe haven't earned yet. It's probably the takeaway there. And if you are looking to claim things back, maybe make good friends with your accountant or advisor or whoever and really learn the ropes on that. As much as tax sucks and none of us want to learn it, learn enough so that you sort of know the general boundaries of it. And then run it through a professional.
Yeah. And I think probably like basic number way of looking at this is it's better to pay a bit more tax on 100K than pay less tax on 70K. You know, it's the same as applying for a job on 70K or 100K. What are you going to walk away getting earning more? That money that you've spent and claimed against, that's gone to another business. It's not staying in your bank account, in your business's bank account. You've just taken the 70K job instead of a 100K job.
Yeah, things like income protection or insurance. Because if you're the one bringing in the money, and of course, business can be quite uncertain, do you need to safeguard yourself? Are there things you should be looking into?
Yeah, look, I can't give insurance advice as such, but I'd probably go really high level and generic on this, is it doesn't actually matter whether you're self-employed or a PAYE person, that you probably should have some protections there around that income. You know, whether you are the business, okay, and you're self-employed and you're what's generating the money, or myself as a PAYE employee, I'm what's generating that money. So if something happens to you in business or an employee, you've got to have some protections around that. Yes, obviously it comes at a cost, but that's like with all insurances, we'll insure stuff, but you know, whatever earnings we're making is worth a lot more than that stuff, and we don't insure that quite often.
Yeah, a hierarchy I got given yonks ago was people first, then money, then stuff. Whereas we often instinctively, because it's right in front of us and we can see it, tend to insure first stuff and then not even get to the other two.
I think we've got to understand that, yeah, obviously valued as people as well, but in terms of from a financial advisor and a numbers person, we're the biggest number in the house. So yeah, ensuring that is vital.
On that, cash flow can be pretty lumpy when you're in the self-employed world. You mentioned before about the 3-month buffer. I think that's a really good one to point out. Are there any other ways to sort of smooth things out, make it a bit easier?
Yeah. Look, I think quite often people that are self-employed could blur the lines between the business accounts and the personal accounts, and it becomes very tricky to smooth things out over a course of a year when it's all intertwined. So that would be the first one.
Even I did that because we jumped into business so fast, and it was, we very quickly pulled it back and was like, that's not going to work.
Yeah. Like, and you can get stuck into that. And so like, I sort of explained it recently to a client that had things too intertwined. Before being a financial advisor, I was a finance analyst for a company that had 100 plus restaurants that went into COVID. And I've found some self-employed clients' financial accounts set up more complex than what I had to deal with on the financial side of 100 restaurants having to close. That would be the first big things, have them separated out, then working out the buffers for both the personal finance and the business piece.
Next.
Working through, whether it's with your accountant or yourself, what a year traditionally looks like. When is the downtime? When is the uptime? So you're setting yourself reasonable targets to hit, and probably overachieving in the, you know, if you had a 100K over a year, you need to deliver more per month in those busier times. So not just setting a, like I've seen too many as well, divide by 12 and she'll be right. I'll do that each month. It's like, that ain't going to work. It's not how your business operates. So yeah, really setting yourself monthly benchmarks to work against when you know your business. You probably at that point need 4 to 5 months worth of buffer just before then, because you're going to erode back to 3 when the quiet time happens. And that's all too common, that people might get to 2 or 3 months of buffer, then gets quiet, not through, you know, any poor work of theirs.
Happens,
and the whole buffer is gone. And so they're just constantly just yo-yoing around, and they can't then on the personal side make any financial progress, because the business never feels safe.
And it's easy to underestimate how those little wins can make a big difference, but don't ignore the simple stuff. The simple stuff can be the big stuff. Look, if there's someone who's listening to this and they're realizing, okay, yeah, maybe I have been winging it a bit more than I realized, what is a good place to start? Beat that overwhelm, start here, and start building a proper financial foundation.
Yeah, so having a look at whatever tools you're using to measure your business and see how it's gone. If it's not hitting the marks that it should, what levers can you pull within your business to potentially up the income? Can you charge a little more? Can we do a little bit more in terms of driving demand? I think it got to come a point for some businesses as well to understand if it's maxed itself out and we're not happy with that number, or the number's, you know, okay, but we're working ourselves 60 hours a week for 65K. Should we continue on? So it's a tough conversation and thing to think about, but there's definitely a portion of self-employed businesses that are out there that would be being paid more if they had a full-time job and work probably half the amount of time. But you're not going to know if that's the case until you look under the bonnet, because you put in obviously a lot more hours than when you're just an employee. Would you take that job or break? And what I've actually said to a client recently was, okay, cool, let's work this out over an annual basis. amount of hours that you've worked, you're on $14.25 an hour.
Oof. That's a hard reality check.
Because there was not much more that he could really do to up his service fee or the demand in his area for it. Loved what he did, but also didn't love the fact that they were going backwards. So that was the realization piece where he was like, yeah, I'm not actually enjoying it anymore. It's been 6 years of this. He's now, I think, on a role that pays probably 40% more than what his profit was, and he's working a lot less and stressed a lot less.
Has a huge impact on your quality of life. Yeah. It's just a reality.
The reality's happening whether you look or you don't. You know, so you may as well actually realize it, have some self-awareness of where things are at. And yeah, it can be a really great exercise, and we take a good to a great business. It can take an average to a good business, or an average that's not going to improve to that situation where it's like, cool, let's exit this.
Gotta look. I love that bit. I think that's going to stick with me, actually. The reality is happening whether you look at it or you don't. That's really good life advice for a lot of stuff. Thank you so much. That's Justin Gauci from Enable Me. Now, if this episode was helpful to you, first of all, hit subscribe to make sure you never miss a trick with your money wherever you're listening right now. But secondly, send it to a friend as well. We can all level up our money together. Until next time, have a great day.
Just a note before you go, this podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.